we try to increase a little bit the number of the audience by doing some broadcasting service. When we are in the Holy Dhamma, we often think or feel here is the spiritual world, but I'm just not able to see it. I'm just not able to really enter into it. I'm seeing Vrindavan, I'm seeing obviously the other things, the garbage and the noise and all other stuff, but how do I enter into the spiritual dimension? We can feel the spiritual dimension is there, but how do we get access to it? And as I was meditating on this point, I remember sometimes my Guru Maharaj will say, to enter the spiritual world, there is a very small door. And to enter through this door, you need to crawl on your belly. Meaning you need to be down in the dandavat position. And from this position, you can enter into the other dimension. So I was thinking more and more and more. That was my entrance a little bit into the mood of humility through this question, how can I actually pierce through this covering of illusion and come to the real Vrindavan? So I was the first month staying in Nandagram in Vrindakund. Do you know Vrindakund? In Nandagram?
In Nandagram? Uh-huh.
Yeah, very nice place. It's actually very secluded, and there you have just two houses and two straw huts, no electricity, and I had very nice times there to just chant and read, and there was the pujari is coming from Nandagram every day to do the puja. And one day there was the father of the pujari who was there. And I will go every day to the arati of Vrindadevi, and that day the father was there. And he looked at me and said, "You are so great. You are so great. I'm so proud of you. You are just chanting, doing sadhana. You are so great. You are so great." And I was thinking, oh no, that's exactly what I don't want. That's exactly what I don't want to be like treated. Or to feel like I'm actually great. I want to go into the other direction. I want to go into this door of humility. And that's very interesting to time to time check what are our motivation as we are practicing devotional service. Do we want to become great? And I remember sometimes finding myself praying to Krishna, please, I want to advance. I want actually to become a great devotee. And later on, I realized actually it's quite dangerous, a prayer. I should rather pray, "My dear Lord, I would like to become pleasing to you." Then I'm totally safe from this problem of becoming proud. Because that's actually quite a problem as we are practicing Krishna consciousness, that we might start to think, actually, I'm great now. I'm better than others. It's very
We have a message that is not sound.
Okay. Did you connect with the
yes,
where did you connect?
Microphone.
Yeah, that's normal. Then there is no sound. Mm-hmm. You need to connect. You see those three cables? Yellow, red, and white.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take the red and white out. You remember, like with this in mind?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's actually a danger as we are progressing in Krishna consciousness, that we fall in the trap of developing our ego, of thinking we are someone great, someone important. We were discussing that in this yoga studio with the teacher there. Because they don't have so much the conception of false ego and ego. For them it's everything one. And he was saying, yeah, but we still need to have some ego. to do our services. And then there was the point, like false ego, it's really when you are on the conception of bodily conception or mind conception, I'm so great. But when you are in the real ego, it's I'm just a servant. And this is actually very much the safe position. I would like to bring a little bit the thought on humility in connection with Chaitanya Lila. In Chaitanya Lila we have different associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they represent some different qualities. Like for example, Haridas Thakur, anyone knows which quality he represents? Quality of tolerance. And Ramananda Roy, he has this quality of being totally free of lust. You remember he was dressing those young ladies. And we have one associate of the Lord who represents humility. Anyone of you guess? That's a good try. Yeah, it was a very, very humble soul also. But Sanatana Goswami is mentioned as the example of humility. In Krishna Lila Stava, Sanatana Goswami is writing a prayer. He said, I'm not a devotee, but I have the lifestyle of a devotee. Please, my Lord, have mercy on me. My Guru Maharaj was often pushing on this point. Don't think because you are dressed like a devotee that you should think you are a devotee. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita also Sanatana Goswami explained that humility, it's actually when humility becomes condensed, it becomes actually prema. It becomes like love of God. When it's the level of humility becomes more and more and more condensed, then it's transforming in love of God. And we can see all those devotees who are advanced, how humble they are, and with this humility how the heart becomes soft and how they can easily attract the mercy of the Lord. In Chaitanya Charitamrita also we have the place where Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, just before they got initiated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they were actually praying to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at the end of this prayer, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, please now stop. Your humility is breaking my heart. You are so humble. And I have recollected today, I just read again from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I would like just to read to you those prayers from Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just to get deeper into this mood of humility. In great humility, both brothers took bunch of straw between their teeth, and each, binding a cloth around their neck, fell down like roads before the Lord. Upon seeing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the two brothers were overwhelmed with joy, and out of humility they began to cry. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to get up and assure them all good fortune. The two brothers got up, and again, taking straw between their teeth, they humbly offered their prayer with folded hands. So he heard prayer of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Sir, we belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates are employment. Oh, sorry, I'm not such a good reader. I start again. Sir, we belong to the lowest class of men, and our associates and employment are also of the lowest type. Therefore, we cannot introduce ourselves to you. We feel very much ashamed standing here before you. We too are millions and millions of times inferior to Jagai and Madai. We are more degraded, fallen and sinful than they. No one within the three worlds is sufficiently powerful to deliver us. You are the only savior of the fallen soul. Therefore, there is no one but you. If you simply deliver us by your transcendental strength, then certainly your name will be known as Patitapavan, the savior of the fallen soul. We are the most fallen. Therefore, by showing us your mercy is most successful. Let the power of your mercy be exhibited throughout the entire universe. Let us submit one piece of information before you, dear Lord. It is not at all false, but is full of meaning. It is this. If you are not merciful upon us, then it will be very, very difficult to find more suitable candidates for your mercy. We are very depressed as being unfit candidates for your mercy. Yet, since we have heard of your transcendental qualities, we are very much attracted to you. Indeed, we are like a dwarf who wants to capture the moon. Although we are completely unfit, a desire to receive your mercy is awakening within our minds. By serving you constantly, one is freed from all material desires and is completely pacified. When should I engage as your permanent eternal servant and always feel joy to have such a fitting master? After hearing the prayers of Dabirakash and Sakara Malika, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Daribakash, you two brothers are my old servants. My dear Sakara Malika, from this day your name will be changed to Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami. Now please abandon your humility, for my heart is breaking to see you so humble." The Lord then placed his two hands on the heads of both of them, and in return they immediately placed their lotus feet of the Lord on their heads. All the Vaishnava associates of the Lord were present, including Nityananda Prabhu, Haridas Thakur, Srivas Thakur, Gadadhar Pandit, Mukunda, Jagadananda, Murari and Vrakeshvara. They were all very much gladdened and they began to chant the holy name of the Lord. Hari! Hari! So I found it's very nice to enter into the mood of Sanatana Goswami, and we can see very often this repetition. We are so fallen. We are more fallen than Jagai and Maya Madai. And sometimes we ask ourselves, is it necessary that I need to feel myself fallen to become in the mood of humility, or is it not necessary really to? Is that really the real humility? And I was hearing, I think it was from Bhujan Prabhu, he was mentioning that it is actually necessary to come in this mood of feeling that we are fallen, because that's our real mood, that's our real state. If we observe how much bhakti we have in our heart, how much devotion we have, if we are honest, we understand I have not much devotion. I'm actually quite in need of mercy, quite in need. But the devotee never stay in this negative pole of, oh, I'm so fallen. Immediately when the thought of being fallen is there, the devotee immediately turns toward the Lord. But you are Patitapavan. But you are my savior. So the idea is that the devotee never stay just all the time, I'm so fallen, and but immediately when he feels that he's fallen, his eagerness for receiving the mercy from the Lord is actually increasing, and then it's go like a dynamism in increasing the longing and increasing eagerness toward Krishna. Unless one feels fallen, how can one become eager to call for the mercy? There is also a very nice example of Sanatana Goswami and humility when he came to Jagannath Puri, he was traveling from Vrindavan and he got a big disease by drinking water. All the all his body was becoming open with pus and very bad things. And when he arrived in Jagannath Puri, Mahaprabhu was just all the time embracing him. And that was very, very embarrassing for Sanatana Goswami. A few times he was trying to offer obeisances from distance, but Mahaprabhu would always come and just embrace him. And for Sanatana Goswami, it was very, very difficult situation. And one day Mahaprabhu invited him to come for lunch, and it was like noon time. And when Sanatana Goswami arrived at the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, I guess it was in Gambira, Mahaprabhu saw that all the feet of Sanatana Goswami were blistered, were very damaged. And he asked, "But what did you do? From where? Which road did you take?" And Sanatana Goswami said, I went from the beach side where the sand is very burning." And Mahaprabhu said, "Why? Why did you do that?" And Sanatana Goswami said, "I did not want to go in the center of the town, because maybe one Brahmana would have touched me. And I'm so impure. I preferred to take the safe path, that no one will touch my oozing body." And that's really amazing that one will think like this. When we are in Jagannath Puri, we think, "Oh, all those panda, they don't allow us in the temple," and blah, 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 blah. But we see how pure devotee is thinking. And when this mood of humility is there, also it's very interesting, there is no space for offense. When one person is humble, he's actually very, very careful to not offend anyone. And we have this example here with Sanatana Goswami, just even avoiding the center town to just make sure he will not touch any brahmanas there. So very interesting point also. Sanatana Goswami was becoming so depressed to be all the time embraced by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he thought, "Maybe I should commit suicide." And Ratayatra was coming, so he was planning to throw himself under the Ratayatra cart. And Mahaprabhu understood his mind and told him, "You cannot do that." And then he said, "Your body actually belongs to me. You cannot do what you want with your body. You have offered yourself to me, your body belongs to me." And here is also a very, very interesting point in connection with humility. This giving oneself, giving one's body to Krishna. And there I would like to tell you something that happened again during my journey in India. When I was staying in Nandagram one day, Sachinandana Swami called me and he was looking for accommodation in Varshana. The place he was supposed to be did not work out. So he said, "Go to Varshana and go to Vinod Bihari Baba." That's a Gaudiya Vaishnava who is living in Varshana. He's very well known there. So I just took my bag and took a rickshaw, went to Varshana, and I arrived in the ashram of Vinod Bihari. And so Vinod Bihari came out and I was just suddenly in front a very amazing person, very, very, very powerful, very loving. But when you will see in the eyes, there was like a volcano inside this person. This person was just doing bhajan all the time, chanting a lot. And so I was very becoming very, very humble in front of him. And I said, I told him, "Sachinandana Swami is looking for a room." And so he thought a little bit and he said, "I will try very hard." And then he said, "Now I'm going to the temple for darshan. If you want, you can follow me." So I did not know what else. I did not know when more answer will come from him, because I was now in mission and I had to figure it out how we could get a room for Maharaj. So I follow him. He made like the big parikram of Varshana, and it was just amazing. When he was crossing Varshana, most of the merchants that were there, they were stopping what they were doing and they were just going and touching his feet. Children would come and embrace him, and like everyone was respecting him and loving him. And he was just like a child. He was just like without any pretense, without very, very humble personality. And I realized at that time, when one is humble, is actually everyone loves a person which is humble, because he's really himself. But when pride is there, it's always a phenomena that we try to show that we are better than what we really are. And as soon as this pride comes, then it actually gives a repulsive effect. People actually do not feel so much attracted to a person which is proud. And then at the end of the parikram, we went up the hill, and Baba was feeding the monkeys. He had quite a lot of cookies, and he would give them 3-4 cookies at once. And then as they were eating, he was patting their heads like this. It was just so amazing also to see the generous aspect of this person. He was also giving bonbons to the children, or candies to the children. And as I was, you know, just watching, I was just following this sadhu and just watching, and I could see how his generous heart was actually a big help for bhajan. When one is generous toward others, then the heart just naturally opens, and then one can actually chant the holy name or have practice of bhajan in a much more deeper sense than when we are egoistic and when we keep things for us. Then we went up to the temple, and we took darshan, and suddenly I look, Baba was in a corner of the temple. He took away his shirt, I mean, it was quite warm at that time, and he was offering obeisances. He was putting his hand like this and then falling flat on the ground, offering dandavat. Then he will stand up, he will pray and do it again like 10 or 20 times at the same place. And obviously he took away his chador so that his body could be touching the dust of all the pilgrims that had been done in this place. And then he went in the back of the courtyard, and many people gathered around him, and then he was just speaking for 10-15 minutes about realization, or it was in Hindi, I could not understand. But at that time I was there, and I was thinking, okay, but what's next? When will I know anything about the rooms for my Guru Maharaj? And it was dark, I did not have a place to stay yet, so I asked one who was with him if I could stay in their ashram, and okay, they agreed, and we had nice kirtan in their ashram, and then they gave me a place to sleep. And so in the morning I was okay, so what do I do now? When maybe he forgot, you know, what's going on. But around 10 o'clock like this, he called me in the room and he said, I have the place for your Guru Maharaj. So my Guru Maharaj had quite a lot of requirement. It should not be too loud, it should be secure, I need a room for a servant, we need a cooking arrangement. There was quite some, and I could not tell anything to Baba, and Baba was now saying, I have the room for your Guru Maharaj. So I say, oh yeah, thank you, but you know, we are from the West and we need sometimes some more comfort. Like I was already feeling that his room will not be fitting. And then he look at me and say, first you look and then you tell me if it's not proper. And then I was there in front of him and I felt I need to ask him a question. He's just such a beautiful sadhu. So I said, Maharaj, how can I develop humility? What practice can I do to become more humble? Obviously the whole process is bringing us more humble, but what can I do more than just the general process to fall? And then he looked at me and he said, you need to give everything to Srimati Radharani. You need to give all you have. And this means you have to understand you are not the body. And your body belongs to Srimati Radharani. And it was quite a deep thought. And then I understood actually pride is often related to what we think we have. can be proud of our car, but often we are proud of qualities that we have, or beauty, of riches. But when we give when we give ourselves, then there is no chance actually to be proud of anything. And then I found also a very nice quote from Guru Govinda Swami, who was saying that when we are chanting the holy name, we should chant the holy name in that mood, understanding, I belong to you. All my mind, my body, all is actually for you. It's given to you. So I found that was a very nice key for me to meditate more on this aspect of developing humility. There is also a very interesting point in connection with humility. My Guru Maharaj will say sometimes, one can fake to be humble, but one cannot fake to be tolerant. No, was it?
Yeah,
was it like this? Like this, yeah. And actually, when one is humble, one can be very tolerant. But one can fake that he's humble, but if he's not able to be tolerant, that means actually his humility is something fake. And we can actually, this I have a little bit. Yeah, I have one small part of this presentation, which is how do we recognize if we are humble or not? What is the how can we observe how humble we are? And it's very much connected on this point of how tolerant we are, and also how tolerant we are when we are corrected by someone. There we can immediately see how much humble we are, and especially if the person who is correcting us is a junior one. Ooh, there we can. Or if we are connected, if we are corrected for something we did not do. Oh, then we can see also how much humility is actually there. There are some other way we can see about how humble we are. It's on the point of how much do we take shelter in Krishna. Huh? When we are proud of our abilities and we think we can manage our life by our own, then we are not so much taking shelter. But when we are in a humble mood, then we understand actually that's all I have, the shelter of Krishna. I have nothing else I can really do, or really I'm helpless without the mercy. I cannot go on. And I had also an interesting experience in Vashana. One morning I was there for the Mangalarati, and at the end of the Mangalarati there was one priest who was distributing garlands to some devotees, and I was passing there, and I was hoping in my heart to get one of those garlands, but I just went straight, like some pride was there. And then I understood, why are you not eager for the mercy? The mercy is just being distributed there, and why you should be running there, and you should like beg or cry to get this garland, but you are just so pride, you just think, yeah, it's not so important, even if I don't get it, or like this. And it's interesting to see, we are so much in contact with mercy, with Mahaprasadam, with the holy name, and how much do we have this eagerness to really receive the essence of Krishna consciousness, to really receive the mercy of the Lord, so that we are able to relish those items. So there, I think it's very nice connection between humility, how much humble we are and how much we feel we are dependent on this mercy of the Lord. And as more we think we don't need so much the mercy, then it's a sign that pride is there in our heart. We had one devotee sometimes ago in Golokadam who was a little bit elderly, and I gave a lecture on humility also at that time, and he was saying, I'm very, very humble. And once or twice a younger bhakta was telling him, because he did not know so much, you should shave before taking shower, it's better. Like this, and immediately this he goes. So in the lecture, as he was saying, but I'm very humble, then I was saying, yeah, we can see how much humble we are when someone is correcting us, or in fact this being corrected is very, very important for us, and it's, according to Vaishnava, it's seen like nectar when one is chastised. And we have this experience because Sanatana Goswami had all the time his body full of ooze and all those pus and bad things, and he just could not bear it. Mahaprabhu was still embracing him all the time. So he approached Jagadananda. He said, what should I do about that? And Jagadananda told him, you should take shelter at your service. Mahaprabhu gave you the service to be in Vrindavan and to write books, and so you just go back to Vrindavan and take shelter of your service, and just don't try to be there, just get all the time a close association with Mahaprabhu, take shelter of your service. So Mahaprabhu later on told Sanatana Goswami told Mahaprabhu, said, oh, I'm going back to Vrindavan. And Mahaprabhu said, Why do you do that? And he said, oh, Jagadananda told me it might be a good idea. And Mahaprabhu became furious. How could Jagadananda advise you? You are so elevated. You can advise me. And you Jagadananda gives you advice. I will chastise him. And he chastised Jagadananda very severely for that. But then Sanatana Goswami approached Mahaprabhu and said, why are you giving so much love to Jagadananda, and why are you so cruel with me? Why are you giving Jagadananda the nectar of your chastising words, the nectar of your care for him, and why are you just giving me the poison of your embrace all the time that is so difficult to bear? And this is how the devotee sees. They see all those chastisements and these difficulties like nectar, because they can take shelter. That's very helpful. But kind words are actually very often bringing our ego up and making us think, oh yeah, actually, finally they recognize how great I am. You know, it has this ability. It's also very easy to be humble when everything goes the way we want. But when things do not go the way we want, then we see actually how humble we are. So I would like to end this presentation maybe with just something a little bit like a summary of what I did, and a little bit like tools to develop humility, the practice of humility. So we had this interesting point that came up through Vinod Bihari of offering oneself to Krishna, and something that is very strong that Vinod Bihari was also doing is those obeisances, to offer obeisances. This is very, very practical way to go into the mood of humility. Raghunath Das Goswami was offering around 1,000 obeisances every day in different temples, to every Vaishnava you will see. And my Gomaj did a Govardhan Dandavat Parikram and was making a little bit some calculation about distance, number of obeisances, and he was saying like 1,000 of obeisances is almost 3 to 3.5 hours of offering obeisances a day. And that was what Raghunath Das Goswami was doing also in this aim of developing this humility. Yeah. Or less. Uh-huh. So after my time in Antakrama, I was for the month of Kartik in Radhakund, and I thought I should try this point of doing obeisances. And I did one Dandavat Parikram of Radhakund and Shyamakund. Everyone knows what a Dandavat Parikram is? You make one Dandavat, then you stand up, you walk to where your hands were, and then you make another Dandavat, and then you walk another. So you just go, and you are all the time on the floor. You are all the time, you are slower than everybody, and you are at the level of the animals that are around. It's really amazing experience, because you are feeling the bliss. You are feeling like you swim in the bliss of the dust of the Vaishnavas, especially Radhakund, Shyamakund. So many pilgrims, so many sadhus are on this path. So you are offering obeisances, and you just feel the bliss of touching the dust of their lotus feet. And you are sometimes in places which are very dirty, especially the marketplace in the morning time. It's really, really something. So it brings really amazing paradox of being touching very powerful spiritual substance, and at the same time to see some apparently dirty stuff. And yeah, for me it was very, very moving experience to do this Dandavat Parikram. It's almost like every Dandavat you go deeper and deeper into a mood of prayer. It's there are times just tears were coming out, just the longing, the strength of prayer was becoming more and more condensed. One day I was in this mood of praying for signs. I was like coming to this mood of helplessness, you know. I'm serving, I mean, obviously it's not so long, 10 years or so I'm doing service, but how often can I do devotional service? How often am I really craving to please you in my service? And I was really like praying, please allow me to serve with love and devotion. This is what I want to do. And I was praying for sign. It was early in the morning. I will do that early in the morning or late in the evening, so that nobody will see me, and I will not have the tendency to feel, oh, I'm so great, I do Dandavat Parikram. And that morning, one sadhu came. He had like dreadlocks and a chador around. He was tall person. And as I was doing this Dandavat and was in this mood of crying, he just came in front of me and just put his hand in front of me and put in his head, a little bit like offering some type of respect to me. And I just could not catch myself. I was anyway down. I went and touched his feet. And as I touched his feet, he just placed his hand on my head. And I just felt like the sign was there. I was asking for a sign. And that was just one scene that was really deeply moving inside. And I feel it's very nice. I try also when I see Vaishnava and to develop more this attitude of bowing down and offering obeisances. I think it's something very, very powerful. That it's just like a physical things we do, but that influence very much our psyche, our mind. Like we were doing some yoga some days ago, and just also you just do those exercises, and then also your mind become transformed just by the physical exercise. The mind become influenced. Nityananda Das, one very nice sadhaka who was in the Sanskrit school in Govardhan, he wrote an article in this book from Danuda Swami on entering the chanting japa meditation book. And he speak about obeisances, and he said, my way to enter the holy name is by offering obeisances. So he's offering to his guru, then he's standing up, then to Prabhupada, then he's standing up, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, the old parampara standing up, Gaunitai, and then to the holy dham, to the holy name, Radha Krishna, and then he starts to do his chanting. And he said, it takes like 10-15 minutes, but when I start to chant, I'm just like right on. I'm just like totally prepared. And that was also Mahaprabhu's teaching on Trinada Pisunichena. One should chant the holy name in this humble state of mind, and also with tolerance, tolerant like a tree. So we see how tolerance and humility are very, very closely connected. I was hearing a lecture when my Guru Maharaj was speaking about offering obeisances, and he was explaining obviously there is the physical things we are doing, but we should be pronouncing some prayers when we offer obeisances, which can be prana mantra of our Guru Maharaj. But often when we offer obeisances to Radha and Krishna deity or to Gaunitai, we can also say some special prayers for Gaunitai or for Radha and Krishna. It's not that we have to, I mean, it's also okay to always say the prana mantra of the spiritual master, but it's very nice also to have some personal prayers for the deities. And then the body, the words are there, and then our heart can be in tune to what actually it means to offer obeisances. It's also like an offering of oneself. And my Guru Maharaj was saying sometimes when we offer obeisances, we can meditate that with our hands we go and touch the lotus feet of the deities to whom we are offering obeisances. And I like to end with very interesting example of a sadhu which practiced humility very, very deeply. His name is Fakir Mohan Prabhu. I don't know if anyone of you, I guess who knows Fakir Mohan Prabhu? No one of you. He's a very, very special soul. He's in care of the deities of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Radha Madhava. And he is very much connected. He's actually from Gaudiya Math, but he's one of the only Gaudiya Math sadhu who is allowed to give lecture in ISKCON. That's a very interesting and very, very pure soul. Very, very pure soul and very, very humble. So one day, one of my godbrother, Jai Gopal, was in Vrindavan on a rickshaw with Fakir Mohan Prabhu. Fakir Mohan Prabhu needed, he's 80 years old, small, and he was born in a devotee family, so very, very deep person. So they were together on the rickshaw, and suddenly in the middle of the road, Fakir Mohan Prabhu said, stop the rickshaw, man. So the rickshaw man stopped, and Fakir Mohan go down the rickshaw, cross the road, and there was a sannyasi, and he just go and offer his full dandavat to the sannyasi, and then come back to the rickshaw and say, okay, let's go. So Jai Gopal was shocked that he had stopped the rickshaw just to offer obeisances to this sadhu. And then he looked at Fakir Mohan Prabhu, and Fakir Mohan Prabhu looked at him and said, this is my hobby. To offer obeisances. That's what he liked to do, to offer obeisances. He was in Goloka Dham last year for a few days. He often visits Switzerland and often go to Antwerpen. It's in Belgium. And on Goloka Dham is right on the way, so he stopped for a few days. And one day we had a Sunday feast, so he came for the Sunday feast, and so he came in front of the Prabhupada, offered his obeisances to Prabhupada. Then he come in front of the altar, so he offered his obeisances to Gaunitai. Then he stood up, he went in front of Radha Madan Mohan, offered his obeisances. Then he stood up, and you know, he's old, so all the time he's like a little bit, you see, it needs some extra effort for him to do that. So he stood up, and then he went to Chota Radha Madan Mohan and offered obeisances to Chota Radha Madan Mohan. And then he stood up, and in Goloka Dham there is one devotee who visits every Sunday the temple, and he always brings his small Gaunitai, and the small Gaunitai were in a table a little bit aside from the altar. So he was ready to go on the sit on the Vyasasana, and then he see those small Gaunitai. It just again fell on the ground, offer obeisances. And I was just so amazed. I mean, usually I just offer one, and that's for all of them. and the gonitai of this devotee, I feel, yeah, they are nice, but we have our gonitai, you know. But I could see a person who is humble. He just likes to offer obeisances. It's just, and he can see. He has the eyes to see Krishna is there. Here is Krishna. I have to offer obeisances, and that's very, very, very nice example of a humble devotee. Yeah, so that's basically what I wanted to say today. I like very much this point of humility, obviously because I know that I have quite some work to be done on that, and it was like coming as a sign, so I know it's something I need to work on. But I'm very grateful I got to all those different perspectives of offering oneself, of offering obeisances. And also one point which is very connected is to accept all the circumstances of life, to accept how the life is coming in any way that it comes, to accept it as prasad, to accept it as the mercy of the Lord. So that was my attempt to do a little service. I would be happy to hear from you now if you have any comments, or how do you deal with humility points? Do you sometimes just ignore it?
I have questions.
Okay. Oh. Okay. I will try.
First one is.
Where are you going?
Do you have some tea?
There was once even a joke on the internet about like two doctors coming together, and one says, "Oh, I'm so fallen," and the other says, "Oh, I'm still in that fallen than you." And this person says, No, I'm more fallen than the straw on the street." And the other says, No, I'm even more fallen. I'm even more fallen than the stool on the street. And I'm even more fond of the worm who is in this school. I'm even more fond of the worm who is in this school. This worm.
Wow, that goes far.
It goes like that.
So
it's a joke. Yeah, but you know, there is a tendency. I saw it in the temples. Another question is that it's kind of related to this. It's also about humility, but it's all intended. And there was, if there is a person who is extremely humble, he's probably the most service that he doesn't probably want to do. And once we talked with him, I said that I think the good news is if we don't go to Vrindavan, my question is what to get people out of this ideas what is to be humble.
I think one interesting point is it's good to say I'm fallen, but one should know why actually I'm fallen. What does it mean? Why do I think I am fallen? And I feel it's very good when we feel fallen because we are not Krishna conscious, because we are not able maybe to render proper service, or we are not able to think so much of Krishna. Then I think it's all right. It's good to feel like this, and then to go again toward the positive injunction, but my Lord, you are merciful and I want to receive your mercy. But I think that's one of the things sometimes when, and especially when they argue, I'm more humble, this is really a joke, this but there is something. When I gave one lecture in Goloka Dham on this topic of humility, and one devotee asked at the end, is there some false humility and some real pride? Is there something like this? And I think Narottam Das Thakur write in a song that one actually can be proud or proud of the chance of being in Krishna consciousness, of the chance of chanting the holy name. But obviously, or the proud of one's guru, it's good, but obviously if we this is a type of pride we should keep in our heart and cherish there. If we start to tell everyone, oh, my guru is so good, or like this, it's not so good. But there is also the false humility where we actually have abilities to do service for Krishna and escape the service in the with the excuse, I'm actually so fallen. Can you lead kirtan? Oh no, I'm so fallen. And you know, the person is able to sing kirtan and to do good, but the person is using this humility, and this is false humility. When one has ability, and obviously one never put himself in front, let me chant, let me lead, the humble person will stay in the side. But when a humble person is requested to do service and he know how to do service, he has to do it. And for this devotee, it's difficult, and maybe this devotee really feels it like this. I'm too fallen and I cannot go to Vrindavan. So you say, go to Mayapur.
It's the same.
I think I know this devotee.
We all know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible at all to help him. But yeah, he's really, really humble. Yeah, and you could feel a lot of sympathy for him. Yeah. You feel he's just wonderful. But maybe if you say it a few times, maybe he will think. And also, if you say, "Come with me," when I go, you come with me, and I will arrange that you do everything right and that everything goes well. And so that's all I can say. I don't know if I. Maybe someone else has the answer to Thakopinath's question. I'm not sure I could answer so good.
I have a question which maybe leads somewhere.
What is the difference between humility and self-esteem?
That's a good question. I think my Guru Maharaj once said that real humility, low self-esteem, is to think of one less of oneself, and humility is to think of oneself less. That means when you are in low self-esteem, you are all the time thinking that you are low, but you are all the time thinking about you, and you are self-centered. But humility is that you don't think of yourself so much. You think of yourself less. So that's one definition you will give between the two. Also, when we come to this point of feeling fallen, which is actually very healthy, when we are genuinely in this point, we feel enthused in Krishna consciousness, and we feel I need the blessing, and we feel the heart is moved. We feel something is spiritually going on in my heart. But one should not just stay in that with I, but turn it immediately toward the Lord and immediately beg and pray for the mercy to come.
Because you mentioned the Janata Tsunichana verse, and my Guru Maharaj says as well something about humility and connection with this verse, that it's when you really know who you are and you are a jiva in the serpent, and when you imagine all the jivas which serve Krishna, it's just nothing else is really comparable to it than a meadow full of grass hulls. And then you can really see, okay, I'm really one of so many, many souls who try to serve Krishna or try to serve themselves sometimes, but it's really very tiny. So when we think of, or we try to think of us in this connection, that the verse that we showed should feel lower than the grass in the street, but more tolerant than the tree, because we need a little bit more movement.
Yeah.
And on the other side, because you were talking as well about the right or the true pride, that when we imagine how many really great souls took so many difficulties on themselves, like all the acharyas in our life, and first of all, Srila Prabhupada, what difficulties it took that I get the chance to chant the holy name. So I have to be worth something, I don't know what, but apparently to Krishna, it's worth to send out such a great soul like Srila Prabhupada to get me. So this is kind of, I don't know, it's like the small tiny part of the two.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Any other comments?
You want to turn the camera? You mentioned the example of Sanatana Goswami and Jagadananda, how Lord Chaitanya wanted to chastise Jagadananda because of being his wife, Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami complained to Lord Chaitanya. You give the nectar to Jagadananda in form of your chastisement, but to me you are so friendly and kind. So I have difficulty with that, because a pure devotee tries to please the Lord, to give pleasure to the Lord. So how is it that a pure devotee says, by expressing your satisfaction, you give poison to me? It came in my mind as maybe I could not figure it out.
I mean, for Sanatana Goswami, it was really special, because Mahaprabhu was just all the time embracing him, and he was just feeling so bad about that. So in one sense, it was like a kind treatment to embrace him, but it was very, very difficult for Sanatana Goswami. So for him, he was saying, that's really like poison. But obviously, when someone is kind to us, it doesn't feel like poison. It's appreciable. I think in this circumstance, it was very much because he was full of pus and blood. And do you know how the story ended with Sanatana Goswami's disease and Mahaprabhu embracing him all the time? Actually, one day when Mahaprabhu embraced Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur was there, and Haridas Thakur said, "But what are you doing, my lord? What is in your mind? Why are you all the time embracing him and you don't cure him?" He said, "You embraced Vasudev the leper, and one embrace you just cured him from all his leper. Why you continue to embrace him and you don't cure Sanatana Goswami?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little bit like, he was like now challenged by his own devotees. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first said, "This is a test of my Lord. My Lord is testing me if I will still embrace Sanatana Goswami, although he has all that, but his body is spiritual, so I will pass the test, and therefore I embrace Sanatana Goswami." And he said, "When I embrace Sanatana Goswami, it smells like a camphor. It smells like aguru. It smells very nicely. And after that, he just embraced Sanatana Goswami, and this time he cured him from the disease. So it was actually a big challenge. And Bhujan Prabhu explained that actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seems to be kind to Sanatana Goswami, but he was molding him, he was working on him, he was actually teaching him and training him by being so kind with him. Any other comment or questions? Gangadhar, tell us something about humility.
I actually told him that I would kill him if he would wake me up again. So
if he would?
Actually, because you said there was, you know, even if you're acknowledged by a younger bhakta, even. So I was initiated. And this non-initiated bhakta, he was there for like 1 week or something. He woke me up in the morning. And I had my reasons for sleeping. I thought I had my reasons. And because we were on Sankirtan. And we had to, you know, clean the car. And it was so late. No, I'm going to sleep. I'm going to sleep through Mother Life. So he came in and with a huge bell, he was ringing. And I actually told him that if you do that again, I'm going to kill you. And I really meant it. Because I was like, it was very early in the morning. And I think I was still good. I mean, actually, I was thinking in that week that followed, I was thinking, maybe that was a little too harsh. I should have told him I'd not kill him. And so next weekend, I met him and I told him I was a bit, you know, I was a bit rash then, but I was sleeping and you woke me up and, you know, I was in a bad mood. And he said, yeah, just keep chanting and it will get better. And I said, well, fuck. And, you know, one more time, I'm going to kill you. So. No control.
But it's interesting to see sometimes how we are tested. In this moment. I think there is also this example of Prabhupada. One day, Prabhupada became very angry in one circumstance, and there was like a newcomer or people who was there, and said, "Why are you so angry? Just chant Hare Krishna." And Prabhupada took his bit and started to chant. He did not answer or just okay, just took his feet and started to chant.
I
wouldn't tell him, I would just tell him. What's the use of talking?
Actually, that was funny because he was real unnerving. Because he would, afterwards, he would go, because you're not waking up in the morning, and I do, and I'm not initiated, for that, therefore you are also not initiated, and you would call me by my bhakta name again. So it was really going on the nerve.
Wow. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's quite,
you know.
Is he still around?
No. He was okay. we would be traveling with him, and like in the night we would. That was like on a Sunday. We would drive out, and we already, you know, went to some little lake, and we, you know, took a dive in the lake, and he would already be against that. He was like, "No, this is no good. There's, you know, there's also ladies," and we would see their bodies, but it's no good. And we're like, "Oh yeah, just stay in the car." So we took a dive, and we came back, and we were like really jolly. I'm like, "Oh, I think we're going to cook something." I don't know, you know, giant thing, like a double kid. and you do do the roja parties and, you know, do the whole thing. Right? And he, the whole time, this one bhakta would chastise us for eating so late. That this is no good after, you know, this kind of evening, after 6 o'clock. And he's like, could you please stop? You know, just keep it down. And the funny thing was, while he was doing it, he would pop in like sweet balls. So he would eat while chastising us for eating late. I'm like, could you shut up, please? And then when we were finished cooking, he was, I think he ate the most. I'm like, so the whole time, you could have just said nothing, and it would have been nice. But now you had to say the whole thing. And he was like, yeah, he was nice. By the nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
He would actually never stop.
There is also actually this story with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who would give lecture, and one man was all the time coming and was arguing and speaking bad, and he was just tolerating, and the disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta were really angry at this man. And one day this man was not there, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati asked what happened to him, and I don't know if he had moved or what happened, and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said he was a good friend of me. He was helping me. All his criticize was, well, he was testing me, and he was there to help me.